Accession number 29540, Mr. Norman Cole, Real 4. Now, it's around about this time that the question of you taking a commission comes up. I think it follows on quite well from something we said just towards the end of the last
time. Yeah.
Tell me what exactly happened. How did you find out about the chance of getting a commission and what happened?
Well, the captain had an office on the site, and he sent a message that I was to go down to the office to see him. And in point of fact, there were three of us there. And when he got down, he was explaining to us that the brigadier had been in touch with him and wanted some volunteers to go to Ocue to become officers in the army. And that he'd recommended the three of us to be put forward. Well, I think we told him at the time, I think each one of us told him at the time, that we didn't want to go to Ocue. We wanted to stay with the regiment. We were in the technical regiment. Well, he had us down again and said that the notice had gone up on the board and he expected our name to be put down there. The brigadier wanted us to sign on this list to say we wanted to go to Ocue to be trained as officers. And we didn't do it. Neither of us, one of the three of us, that is, put our names down. So that notice was taken down, and another notice was coming, and our three names were already on it to go to Ocue.
Typed out.
Either typed or written out, yeah. And we crossed it off. We never heard any more. We could only assume that they could only do it if we volunteered, that they couldn't make us. And I think we assumed also that why they came to us, being a technical regiment, there were people there who could be assumed to have a reasonable level of intelligence, being technical, you know. I assume that's why they came to that regiment, to ask for a few. Probably went to other regiments where they had the same opinion.
So that was that. Now, there's also, you went on leave, and there's a couple of stories. One of them's just sort of amusing, but it has a sort of sad sign, because it's about a child coming up to you.
Oh, in Paignton.
Yes, tell us that story.
Well, I was in Paignton, I was home on leave. And I went down into the town and I went into Woolworths. And a little child came up and grabbed me and was calling me Daddy and Daddy. And his mother was most embarrassed by this because, you know, I wasn't a child's daddy, of course, and to those around him might have looked as if I was. But what clearly was, the boy's father was in the army, and seeing me in uniform, because I was down there in uniform, he'd assumed that I was his father come back from the war. And
the other one is you got ill.
Yeah, I think it was the same leave. I was down in the town again, and I had a cough, a bit chesty, a bit congested on my chest. And we were told that if we needed any medicine, to go to the local hospital. So I went to Paignton Hospital, and a sister came to see me, and I said, you know, I got this cough, and it's a bit hot, you know. Could she give me some Linctus for this? So she got a thermometer out and measured my temperature and said, you've got a temperature. She said, I can't let you out. You've got to stay here now. I daren't let you out of the hospital. So I'll have to find a bed for you. And I said to her, well, my parents have sent me down to the Turner. They won't know where I am if I don't go home. So what we talked it through and what we decided, this manager of the building firm used to take me to Plymouth. He lived in Paignton. So from the hospital, they rang the building firm and told the manager what had happened. And he went to my home and told them where I was, that I was in hospital. And I was in there for several days, of course, until this temperature was down.
What was it? Bronchitis or pneumonia? Or?
No, it was bronchitis. Did I mention the notes about the nurse?
Tell us the story. It's quite amusing.
There was one nurse that was quite sort of a friendly type, very jovial type, quite a young girl. And she was always pulling my leg. Well, when I wasn't very well, I couldn't do anything about it. But the day I was leaving, she was pulling my leg. So I picked her up, carried her out of the ward, took her into the bathroom and dumped her in the bath. No water, of course. And walked out and left her there. And she came out and was laughing about it. And I suppose I had a bit of a guilty conscience, and I invited her up to my parents' home to have tea with us one day, and she did come up. I think she had probably hoped she'd found a soldier friend, but she did come up this once and have tea with us, but that was the end of it.
Now, what preparations were... D-Day was getting closer, you know. I mean, you're into 1944 now. What preparations were your unit making? I mean, did you have vehicles? You had to sort of waterproof. What was going on in preparation? I mean, all of it's been a preparation. I understand that. But what special preparations were being made?
Well, did you say waterproofing vehicles?
Tell us about that. Did you all help with that, or just...
No, we had to do... We were told how to do it, but you had to... get an air supply into the carburetor through a tube that lifted up high. So if it went through water, one sucking in water was sucking in air. It was mostly that. And we had to do some more painting of the signs on the side of the... all the military vehicles of this, our side of the invasion, had to have this white star painted on the side. We were painting stars on the side of our vehicles, getting ready in that way.
Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
So, when did you leave Cobham? Would that be May or...?
Well, this was just a fortnight before D-Day.
Back end of May, then?
Yeah.
so where did you go?
We went to Canning Town, where there was a bomb blitzed area that had been levelled out. They'd made a barbed wire fence all the way around it and put up some tents inside. And we were put inside there, not allowed out, no contact with the civilians at all, because, you know, we were learning more and more about the fact that the invasion was taking place, and therefore we weren't allowed contact with the... and if we marched to where our vehicles were outside of that camp, we had to go in marching order. We weren't allowed to go there by ourselves, so we couldn't talk to anybody. But at that same time, there was a big block of flats just at the side of this bombed area. And I remember some people there, they rigged up a radio and a huge loudspeaker outside, and they were playing music and news to us from the side of this big block of flats.
How did you go? The dockers were pretty friendly. How did they get close to you with these security precautions?
Well, I mean, there's all the town and that right close to us.
So they couldn't stop you, them speaking to you?
Well, they couldn't get near to us because of the barbed wire.
But there's bits about them giving you lemonade and cups of tea.
Oh, that was on the way there.
That was before
we got to the concentration camp.
So once you were in there, no one got to speak to you?
No.
Now, what special equipment was given to you in there? Because I'm particularly interested in the 24-hour emergency rations.
Yeah, well, that was...
Because you taught how to use them. Tell us about that, because people haven't told us much about them. What were the emergency rations?
Well, it was a little pack, and inside there was things like OXO, there was a soup cube, there was hard biscuits, there was a cube that could be a boiling water poured onto it and make a cup of tea, and they'd like milk and presumably a bit of sugar or something. They were all things that could be activated by just pouring on water or et dry in the case of biscuits and that. And that was going to last you for...
And they had a sort of cooking thing, didn't they? Tommy cooker.
There was a little tiny little metal thing, like a little cross, and you put a solid fuel pellet on top of it, set light to it, and that gave you the heat.
And there's a further point in it. Yours was a demonstration.
I was the unlucky one. I was the nearest one when he wanted to demonstrate. And having used mine, so I couldn't have it, I had a job getting its replacement, because we'd all had one, and they said, you've all had them, you know. I did get one eventually.
The other things, you were given May Wests. Was that the proper, the full...
Just the one that goes around the body. Very simple thing.
Training using that at all, or just told how to put it on?
Just told how to put it on, that was all.
And
we then knew, of course, we were about to go on board. He gave us life jacket.
Now, tell me how you boarded.
Well, we had to load up with invasion kit. Like I say, this is all these packs and respirator and everything like that. The whole lot ready for the invasion. We went out of this concentration area to the double-decker buses. And we got on the double-decker buses, and then were told to get off again. Because that, of course, was when D-Day was put back for 24 hours. So we had to march back into the camp for another night. And the next day, out again to the buses, and then we were taken off to the dockyards.
So that would be on May the 5th of June.
Well, I'm not absolutely sure of the what within the one day.
Right, that's fair enough.
When I got to the beach, it was probably D1.
D plus one.
I would guess it was.
So you're not quite sure whether you bought, you know, whether everything was just one day on. So tell me about boarding the ships then. You're not quite sure which day. How did you board them? Did you get on the buses again, I presume?
Oh, yes. The buses took us to the Royal Docks in London. And there was this huge transport vessel there called the Empire Deeds. And we had to get on board. It was already loaded up with all sorts of vehicles and equipment.
Have you heard anything at this point about D-Day? You hadn't had any news of what was happening, or had you?
Well, from the radio that was being blurred out to us, I think everybody knew it was taking place.
So this is almost clear. Certainly, you boarded the Empire Deeds on the.
We knew we were underway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was it? What was on board the ship? How complicated was getting all this stuff aboard? Because was it just your regiment, or was it other units as well?
Well, we're our vehicles. Where I don't know. I don't know anything about our vehicles going over, and so this one had a lot of vehicles on it. And I thought the naughty thing was. The vehicles on top were the ambulances, so from the air it would have looked like a hospital ship. I thought that was naughty.
Now, so what was it like? Where were you on board ship?
Wherever you could get space. There were some there were some hammocks in part of the ship, or you could bed down on the floor, you know, just wherever you could. There was no allocated space at all.
And what did you do? Were you palliasm?
I stayed on deck most of the time. I was curious to know what was happening.
And what could you see happening?
Well, first of all, I mentioned, I think, an old lady down at the side of us, looking off at us, crying her eyes out. I think she'd lost somebody in the First World War, I would guess. And seeing us going off, it was affecting her. And then, of course, we were underway down the river, and then we got to this point.
Was there any sort of send off from anybody else? People cheering you off or anything?
No, nobody about there. Nobody about. No civilians weren't anywhere near it. This was a military area, really. How that lady got there, I don't know.
So, what happened as you went down the Thames?
Well, we got to this place where the Ford works are, Dagenham, and they'd got a lot of their. Their workers, mostly women, of course, in those days, up onto the roof, and they had a very powerful loud hailer up there. And as we were going by, this voice came over this thing, Empire Deeds ahoy, Empire Deeds ahoy, good luck and good hunting. And then we carried on down, and we were in this waiting area at the mouth of the Thames. Boats everywhere.
Also, there's some railway lines.
Does
that?
Yeah, well, as we were going down on the right-hand side, I think it was, there was some shunting going on. And when the drivers of these saw this boat going down, they were sort of sounding the V for Victory sign on their horns. You know, do-do-do-do. And they were all these engines sort of doing a victory call.
Now, how long were you waiting near the entrance of the Thames? Not long.
Not long.
Did you go across in convoy?
Oh, it's huge. When you say convoy, it's just a huge mass of ships, almost like a line of ships. Everywhere you look, right and left, as far as you could see, they were going over.
Now, you've got a warning about the possibility of cross-channel bombardment. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that was over the loudspeaker. The captain came on and warned us that the Germans were liable to try to bomb the ships from dropping bombs from aircraft. And therefore, we had to be prepared to abandon ship and explain to us how to do that and so on.
So it wasn't a cross-channel bombardment. It was, because it says shelled.
Could have been either, bombs or shells. Yeah.
So, were you seasick at all?
No.
So what do you remember? What happens next? As you go across the channel, what do you remember about it?
Well, the only one thing I remember going over was, again, when I was up on deck, looking across, and away to my left, there was a cargo ship ablaze. I can only assume a sort of a torpedo craft, a German torpedo craft, had got through and torpedoed it. And it was like that one was stationary and everything else moving, you know, because that one wasn't, everything else was going by it.
So what happens next?
Well, in the bay, off the beach.
And what did you see there?
Well, the thing I remember most of all on the beach was seeing explosions on the beach. And I don't know why, but I thought, oh, that's good. The Royal Engineers are there blowing up the mines. No sense of fear. And that's just one thing I can't understand there in retrospect. Never once did I have any fear at all. And I thought this was good. The Royal Engineers were there blowing up these mines. They weren't, of course. It was the Germans shelling it and mortaring it.
Now, why weren't you scared? I mean, did you ever think about what was going on?
Well, I knew what was going on. I knew what was going to happen, but I never had any sense of fear. I can't explain it. I think if the only thing that's come to mind, you're so indoctrinated to do your job. All you're thinking about is get in there and doing it. Get in there, get up and finding where these are, you know.
Now, was religion any help to you, do you think? Or was it more the army discipline?
I don't think it existed in my mind at that time.
So it's the army that has
controlled. It was the army.
Line, not anything else.
I was part of the army, full stop.
I believe you saw the war spike, well, and I presume other ships, they're doing the bombardment.
Well, the war spike was exactly behind us, and it was shelling into the land, just in from the shore, of course, to give support to the infantry as they landed.
What did she look like?
Well, the war spike, massive, but just the noise of it, these huge guns, from boom, it was almost frightening.
Could you see the results of the fire? Oh,
No, because the beach went soaked up, and beyond it was partly hidden by houses and that.
Anything else you noticed as you were, you know, as you're going towards the beach?
Minenwerfers. They were firing. You know, the rocket propelled things. They're frightening.
The Germans were firing.
No, we were. There was a ship. It had these rocket propellers.
Oh, the rockets, yeah.
Yeah. There was one of them firing occasionally, and that made a dreadful din.
What could you see of it? What did it look like?
We could just hear the warning and see the smoke as these things went out from this whole battery of projectors.
Were there a lot of ships engaged in this bombardment?
No, I don't know of a lot of ships in... No.
You only saw the rockets and the war spike then?
Yeah, all the others were active in bringing people in, and it was absolutely alive with activity, of course.
What could you see?
Well, boats going in and out, taking, unloading, the docks, you know, the amphibious vehicles were going in and out all the time. It was streams of them that arrived there quickly, taking cans of petrol in, taking people in. Yeah.
Now, what happens next for you? What orders are you given as you get to shore?
Well, before we got to shore, we had these tear-off slips.
These what?
Tear-off slips. It was a long strip where you could tear off individual pieces, and all the ways you were going towards the invasion port, as you boarded the boat, as you came off the boat, and so on, you had to tear off one of these and give it to somebody. They were checking where you were all the time. He said the same number, so if my number was, say, 50, they'd know when 50 arrived at that camp, they knew when 50 got on the bus, they knew when 50 got on the boat, and so on. And the next one to be torn off when we got there was to be handed to the beach officer. He would be at the top of the beach somewhere. We were told to run up the beach as fast as we could, because it was could be under observation. And with fully gate invasion kit, that wasn't easy, running up sand.
Now, hang on, I think you jumped a bit there, because you wouldn't land straight from the Empire Deed, would
no,
you?
No, I went in on a tank landing craft.
Now, how did you get to her? Because that can be quite a job.
Yeah, just steps were right over the side.
What was it like going down the side? With
Hairy. Very unstable.
And you went to a tank landing craft?
Yeah. I know that from letters I wrote home.
Because that's quite a big ship as well.
Yeah, but they'd taken tanks in and then they'd come out and were loading up and taking other things. Because remember, we had vehicles on board as well.
So were they swung aboard it?
I don't know. I didn't see that.
So what happened from... You got on the tank landing craft, what happened then?
Well, that took us into the beach. And in point of fact, when they let the ramp down... It was on to dry sand.
Were you under fire during the approach to the beach at all from anything from the Germans?
I don't remember any more. There was the explosions as we were going in, but I don't remember anything hitting whilst I was running up the beach.
So what happened when you got to the beach?
Ran up across the beach. There was this officer dug into like a dugout at the top of the beach. We had to hand in this slip, cross a lane and go into a field that was marked off with white tapes, and we were told where the Royal Artillery area was. There's someone to tell us. We had to go there and sit down and wait to be told what to do.
And that was a sort of general Royal Artillery rendezvous?
Yeah, yeah. Now, and anything to do with Royal Artillery regiments, we'd gone there and then been sorted out from there.
Now, do you know which beach you landed at? I know it's a bit complicated, but, I mean, they all have names.
Well, Sword.
It was at Sword.
Oh, definitely. It was Lyon-sur-Mer or Luc-sur-Mer. The beach is almost continuous. I always said I landed at Lyon-sur-Mer, but I think the first village sign I saw actually was Luc-sur-Mer.
And so what was happening in this camp? You were just sitting about?
It wasn't a camp, just a field.
Sorry, yes, rendezvous area.
Yeah.
And what was happening there?
Oh, we weren't there very long before someone told us where we had to go and gave us a map reference again.
And where do you have to go? Well, it says 112 Transit Camp, Camp Number 3. I don't know what that means.
Neither do I. I got that from the letters.
Oh,
What I am told you at the moment, I've got every letter that I wrote home to my mother. She kept every letter and I've got them. So some of the information, although I don't remember it, I've got it from the letters I wrote home.
I understand, yeah. So that makes sense. So what, you move inland then. Now, is it the unit moving land or just your one of your little...
just our troop. Just our troop, yeah.
How many is that of you?
Well, we were split up into small... Probably individual posts, probably no more than about half a dozen of us at the time.
And where were you going to? Were you not sure?
Well, I think I gave the name of a... village. It was a village, and there's only one village between Lyon-sur-Mer and Benneville.
Right. I'll stick that in when I spot it. So, what do you remember about the move inland?
Only getting to this village and being told to make for a particular map reference that, which turned out to be a maternity home in Benneville, which is just short of the Pegasus Bridge, of course.
Now, that's the next bit sketched out ahead of what happens. So immediately when you move inland, you meet some French civilians.
One man and a girl. An elderly man and a little girl. And the silly thing, which I recorded and remembered, that I was so impressed that this little tiny girl was speaking French. And I thought, what a clever girl, she can speak French. And of course, after a few moments, I suddenly realised how stupid I was, because I was in France. Where they were going to, or where they come from, I don't know, because there was nowhere for them to go. They were just walking from one battle area into another.
Now, you're moving inland to Grez-sur-Mer, I think it is. Grez-sur-Mer, that's what it says. But you don't remember these things.
I remember Grace Mere, but I didn't know we ground there before we went to Benneville.
It says it's 300 yards from the beach, so.
Oh, right, right. That must have been the road that went along then from Grace from Leon's Mere.
It says you started to dig in there.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yes, I remember that. Oh, yes, I know where you are, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, tell us a bit about that. What sort of digging in were you doing? I mean, what sort of positions were you preparing?
Well, it was defensive, really, because we didn't know what was ahead. We were told there had been snipers. And as far as we knew, the Germans were just ahead. So where we stopped for a moment, we dug in to save you.
Were these just slit trenches?
Yes, just dug in enough to get some protection.
And how deep would you get? I mean, what was a good slit trench for you?
Well, an adequate one would be a couple of feet, I expect, where you could lay down. But the more you went down, the safer you felt.
And anything happened while you were there?
Well, I think that's where we heard the noise. Was it in the...
It looks like it,
There were some woods there.
Tell us that story. That's probably where we'll finish today.
Well, we were very, very conscious of the fact there were snipers about. They kept on warning us about these snipers who would be left behind. And we heard this movement in this woods, so we geared ourselves up with all our aggressive equipment, rifles and hand grenades and so on, and moved forward slowly towards this woods, and then suddenly realized there was a cow there. Nearly every animal was dead. How this one had escaped, I don't know.
Now, what happened then? Your sergeant was Sergeant Wicks, I think.
Yeah.
Now, what had he done? Because you lost him here, I think.
Yeah, well, we were working in small units at that time. We weren't going all as a block to Benneville. We were going small groups, individual posts almost.
Now, what happened to Wicks? Because he had a bit of an adventure, I think. Do you remember?
Well, he was in a jeep, and he went down a road to see if he could find it where the Germans were. And without knowing it, he went through the front line. He was down in the German territory. So they captured him. And Wally Wicks was a linguist, a very extraordinary linguist, fluent in German. And they took him, I think they held him in a cave, if I remember rightly. And he convinced them that they were surrounded, as they probably were, and they gave themselves up to him, and he came back to us with these Germans with him. He gave themselves up as prisoners.
And what state were the Germans in?
Cowed, I would say, is the best word. Obviously a bit frightened.
Now, you then seem to move to somewhere near Alban de Arquinay, to some hedges. And were you actually doing any work for the artillery? I mean, were you in touch with your artillery? That's the main question. Had you yet established any touch with the artillery?
No, we were there preparing to do and prepared to do that. they told us it was a typical French hedge. It's like two normal British hedges with a big gap in between, almost sort of not big enough for a lane, but a wide path between the two hedges. And this obviously went straight up into German territory because we had infantry that dug in slit trenches facing both ways. And we had to find a spot and dig in between them. Well, we did that, but there was nowhere for us to observe at all. There was nothing we could observe at that time.
So you hadn't yet done anything for the artillery? I mean, you were still attempting to set
to get where we could work.